Welcome to the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Pastor Joel Slater continues our series, Making Life Work, with a message titled, How to Deal with Negative People. Now here's Pastor Joel.
Excited to continue our series. You were here with us last week. Pastor Ray gave a great message. We're in this series in Proverbs called Making Life Work, Real Solutions for Everyday Living. And so hopefully you're following along. If you're missing out, you're able to go to the website and find the podcast, download that as well as the notes. Last week, Pastor Ray talked about how to overcome negativity. I'm not really sure how applicable that is in this world, but hopefully you'll find a nugget there somehow. But today we're just continuing that series, and we want to talk a little bit about this idea of how to handle difficult people. Again, not probably something that has to be dealt with in this room, but we just want to play it safe. A few weeks ago, I had a chance to talk about Proverbs, and what I shared was that what I saw was the key to unlocking Proverbs. I mean, Proverbs is a very practical book. It's a very popular book, even with people who don't like the Bible per se. They probably like Proverbs. You probably have seen Proverbs anywhere and everywhere, maybe even in your fortune cookie. You know, you get break crack on a fortune cookie and like, oh, this is probably profound. Probably, you know, there's probably a good chance if someone swiped that from Proverbs. You thought it was from Confucius, but it's actually probably from Solomon. They just stuck it in the cookie. But Proverbs is a very practical book. The problem is that sometimes people don't understand, like, well, you know, I'm living my life and everything, and I read some in Proverbs, but it just doesn't work. And the trick is, the key to unlocking Proverbs is understanding this. It's a very key understanding to this book. Anytime you read a book of the Bible, you need to understand what it's really meant for, rather than just what you're wanting to do with it. And the key to unlocking Proverbs is realizing it's encouraging readers to live in harmony with the general God-given order. It's actually kind of a preemptive book. It's not a book that you pull out when you're in trouble. This is a book that keeps you out of trouble. The intention of Proverbs is actually to be a collection of directions for living. It's a collection of directions for living. Now, the question about this is the problem arises if you don't like directions. Are you the person that buys something, comes home, tears it out of the box, and, oh, I know what I'm doing. And you've got that special, precious someone standing behind you, pulling out of the box, and you don't look at the directions? Nah. Owner's manual for a car? I know how to drive a car. I know what this does. Stick the key in, you stomp on the gas, and you go. I don't need directions. Not everyone does. Directions, here's the thing about directions. Directions are only for people who want to get it right the first time. That's the only group of people that needs directions. Directions are for people who don't want and they don't know the joy of reassembling. They haven't experienced that wonderful sense of having to tear it all apart again and do it all over. Directions are not for those people who want that experience. And directions are for people who are too busy to start over. Now, I know that doesn't sound like you because all of you have all the time in the world. I have a little thing on my desk that I've kept since the very beginning of going into ministry, and the question was this. I learned this the hard way, but the question is, why is there never enough time to do it right, but always enough time to do it over? You ever think about that? Maybe I should have read the directions. Now, many of us don't like following directions. Maybe it's not the car, maybe it's not the IKEA, but it's something. And that's fine. That's your choice. That is your choice. But understand this. There is always a price to pay when you rush into a situation without knowing what you're doing. There's always going to be a price that you pay. Because eventually something's going to go wrong, right? You're going to put weight on that. You're going to trust that. You're going to depend upon that. But I didn't have time to read the directions. But eventually something's going to go wrong. And by the time we realize it's gone wrong, and by the time we go back, and by the time we undo that thing that we did the first time, and then we do it correctly, we probably wasted more time, more energy, more money than if we had simply read the directions and done it the first time, right? Now understand this. Consequences are usually mild when we ignore things like the instructions to repairing a computer or assembling your daughter's dollhouse Christmas morning. But the price of rushing into life situations without following directions is probably going to be pretty steep. You know, there's things that you can cut corners on and everything, and the cost isn't all that much and everything. But when it comes to life situations, coming to your life decisions, cutting corners is going to get pretty costly. Now, Proverbs is meant to ensure, to show us how we can ensure that the next time won't be like the last time. And I'm thankful for it. So for the sake of this series, making life work, real example, real ways of how to handle everyday situations, I want to talk about how to handle difficult people. And the solution is really simple, really easy. You're going to remember it. You're going to be able to apply it. I guarantee you, every single one of you is going to be able to handle this situation. How do you handle difficult people? You don't. You don't handle difficult people. Well, what do you mean by that? That doesn't make sense. That's not true. No, you got to confront things. You got to deal with them. They got to get a handle on their situation, their circumstance, their proclivities, and their hang-ups. That's not necessarily true. Proverbs 17, 27 and 28 says this: a man of knowledge uses words with restraint, and a man of understanding is even-tempered. Even a fool is thought wise if he keeps silent, and discerning if he holds his tongue. You see, not every situation requires your intervention. Not every circumstance and situation requires you to get a handle on things. Don't believe me? Well, so we got to speak up. We got to challenge this. We got to fight this. Yes, but not in the way that we often think. You look in the New Testament, Luke chapter 20, verses 1 through 8. You don't have to turn there. I'll just tell you the story. But it says, one day as Jesus was teaching his people in the temple and proclaiming the good news, the chief priests and the teachers of the law, together with the elders, came up to him. Some very learned, some very educated, some very knowledgeable people came up to him. And they said, tell us by what authority you are doing these things. They said, who gave you this authority? In other words, it was like, what right do you have? Tell us. Don't you think that would be a good question to answer? Solve a lot of problems. And he replied, first, I'm going to ask you a question. Tell me, John's baptism, was it from heaven or from human origin? Now, this is very interesting. He didn't simply give a direct answer. He asked a question. And then the thing about Jesus' question was that he actually gave multiple choice. And in fact, he gave multiple choice, but he actually made it really easy because he gave you a 50% chance to get it right. Was it up or down? God or man? And how interesting that they chose not to respond. They were difficult. They knew the law. They knew the answers. They knew the solutions, but they didn't like the answer. And how did Jesus respond? Not by trying to argue with them, but by saying this in verse 8. Well, they answered, in verse 7, they said, so they answered, we don't know where it was from. Oh, come on. But Jesus said, well then, neither will I tell you by what authority I am doing these things. How do you handle difficult people? The reality is that you don't. Because no one wants to be handled. Do you want to be handled? Do you want someone to come up by the proverbial scruff of your neck and haul you up and hold you up against the wall and say, look, buddy, this is how it's going to be and this is what you're going to do? No, you wouldn't do that. You'd like to do that, but you wouldn't like someone to do that. And why do I ask that question? Why do I turn it on you? Well, here's why. Because it may be possible that in someone else's mind, you are the difficult person. You ever thought of that? Then in somebody else's mind, in somebody else's perception, you're the difficult person. Well, not me. Well, let's find out. Before you can deal with difficult people, you got to find out why they're difficult. And the challenge is that finding out, defining difficulty is very difficult. Make sense? And so the common denominator, I like to look for common denominators. I like to look for that one thing, that common denominator of difficult people. And I would say this, the common denominator for difficult people is this: emotional pain. Somewhere, somehow, conscious or unconscious, in your past, in your present, or the fear of the future, there is an emotional pain that every difficult person is acting on. You wonder why difficult people, one common characteristic of difficult people is they're self-absorbed, aren't they? They only think of themselves. Well, that is true because people in emotional pain become self-absorbed. When that pain in your hip, when that pain in your back, when that pain in your neck, when that pain anywhere and everywhere, mental, emotional, physical, when that pain becomes so great, that's all you fixate on, isn't it? It's all about here. It's all about there. It's all you think about. And so People in emotional pain become self-absorbed, and self-absorbed people make self-absorbed decisions. Well, that's not right. They shouldn't do that. I understand. But that's like telling somebody with chronic pain, stop having pain. You think they're not trying, you think they're not doing, but they're doing things the way they know how. And not understanding that when trying to deal with difficult people is like jumping into what's next before you have read the directions. And how's that going to work for you? When you deal with people in emotional pain, it's going to become personal. And when it's personal, and personal becomes emotional, it's their pain, it's their issue, it's their fear, it's their habit, it's their hang-up. And it is personal, and it becomes emotional. And emotionally charged environments are not ideal for decision-making. But when you're healthy, you have clarity, don't you? When you're healthy and you're not in pain, you make good decisions, don't you? And when you have clarity, you make better decisions. And better decisions result in better responses and outcomes, don't they? So what's the question? Anytime I have begun dealing with difficult people, there was a time where I thought it was my job to fix them. It was my job to handle them. And now I pause and I ask a question. And I've kind of made it one of my axioms in life. It rubs against my very nature. I'm reactive. I'm emotional. I act and I don't think. I want to say I act before I think, but I don't think. And I've learned the hard way that before I do anything and before I try to handle somebody, I ask a question. When they're coming at me, I don't come at them. I pull back and I ask the question, what's the rest of the story? There's always more to the story. And so my main point today is before attempting to get a handle on someone else, the question is, who has got a handle on me? Who has got a handle on me? Before I can get a handle on their situation, before I can get a handle on their circumstance, who and what has got a handle on me? Dr. George J. Thompson is an interesting character. He has a doctorate in English literature, but he also has 20 years of experience in local law enforcement. Plus, he has 2 black belts in martial arts. He wrote a book called Verbal Judo. Verbal Judo. And it's about how to deal with people that are coming at you, how to handle difficult people. And he said this, it just caught my eye, this quote. It said, when you react, the event or the other person controls you. But when you respond, you are in control. So who's got a handle on you? When you're trying to deal with difficult people, who's got a handle? Are you reacting or are you responding? Solomon says that there's 4 different categories of people. Generally speaking, there's 4 different categories of people. There's the wise, who look at their past, all the mistakes, their track record, their victories, and their accomplishments. They look at their present circumstances. Where am I at right now? Do I got money in the bank? Do I not have the money in the bank? Do I have relationships? Do I not have relationships? Do I have a good job, a track record, or do I have a history of being kicked out of my jobs? My past, my present. But then I also look at my future. Where do I want to go? Probably more accurate, where can I go? Because the decisions that you make today determine the quality and the quantity of your decisions you'll make tomorrow. So the decisions, your past will determine your present, and then your present is going to determine your future. And so wise people take all that into account, and they say, what is the wise thing to do? And I'm hoping that every single one of us will fit in that category. But Proverbs also says that there's 3 categories of difficult people. And I'm gonna just ask that you listen to Solomon's warning on this, because here's the reality. If you don't opt for wisdom, you will accidentally back into one of these 3 categories. You will not select this category. You won't look at these 3 categories and go, I think I'll pick this one. Or I'll pick that. You will drift backwards into one of these categories of difficult people. Because to walk away from wisdom is to walk into something else. And as I talk about these categories, I want you to picture that someone, that difficult person, and again, through the lens of asking the question, what's the rest of the story? How did they become this way? Why are this way? And why did they not change? But I also want to challenge you to say, where in life do you fit into one of these categories? And or better yet, which one of these categories are you opting for accidentally? I don't think you're intentionally going after it. I think that instead of wisdom, we oftentimes back into one of these things. So let me talk about this. And again, I may offend you. I may hurt your feelings. I may scare the living daylights out of you. That is not my intention. I love you. And more so, God loves you. And the reality of it is that you warn the people you love. You warn the people you love. So before we push back and step away and say, that hurts, and especially in this world of labels and just like, you can't label that, you can't say that or anything. Oh, God did it. God did it. And he labeled three categories of difficult people. Look at me with the first option. The first option, Solomon says, in the book of Proverbs, throughout, he says the first category of difficult people is the simple person. The simple person. We can characterize these people as we would call them naive or clueless, some people would say. They haven't got a clue. Now, that may sound harsh. That's just the truth. They haven't got a clue. Someone give me a clue. In Hebrew, the word simple is translated open-minded. Well, what's wrong with open-minded? We should be open-minded, open to new ideas, new experiences, new influences. Don't be closed-minded. Well, that's true to a degree. But you've heard the quote, don't be so open-minded that your brains fall out. Come on. Don't be so open-minded, don't be so open to everything that your brains fall out. In fact, Proverbs 9:6 says this. It says, leave your simple ways. Don't stand there, do something. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of insight. See, Proverbs is about that collection of directions for your life that you begin with as soon as possible. And you don't stay simple. You get out of there, you run, and you walk in insight. You know, there's a reason that simple people are not wise. It's not a bad thing. They're not bad. They're not evil. They're not dumb. Simple people are not evil. They're not bad. They're not dumb. They're not trying to ruin their lives, but they lack something that the wise have. And oftentimes, and this is where, again, this is where you got to just pull back for a second and don't get offended, all right, everything. But oftentimes, simple people are young people, okay? And they have something, and they lack something that older people have. Not older people. This is not guaranteed. If you're chronologically old, don't pat yourself on the back quite yet, all right? But young people tend to lack something that older people have, and that's experience. They just lack it. It's not their fault. It's not their problem. They just lack experience. It's not a criticism, but it's a warning. It is a warning. Simple people lack experience. You know, Solomon wrote Proverbs 7. It's a great, great chapter. And it's about that boy. He sees Solomon's up high looking through his window, and he sees a young man walking towards an area of town. He's walking towards a specific house. It is a house of ill repute. It is known to be the house of a prostitute. And come on, I don't have to tell you what a prostitute does. And this young man is walking that way. And Solomon is biting his knuckles, and he is fretting because here we go. And the reason that he can see where this young man's go, and the ability to predict what's going to happen. You ever been around those people that, you know, you sit down with a situation or circumstance, or you're anticipating something, and this person will sit and he goes, okay, this is what's going to happen. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. This is what's going to happen. They're going to react this way, and this is how you're going to deal with it. I always love those people. I'm not one of them. And I sit there and I go, how do you know that? I want that. I want that insight, that propheticness. No, it's wisdom. Been around the block a couple times. I've seen enough guys do this. I've seen enough guys go there. I've seen enough guys dance with this to know that that's what's going to happen, and that's what Solomon does. Solomon says, look there in chapter 7, verse 21. He says, with persuasive words, this woman is going to lead this guy astray. She seduces him with her smooth talk. It's okay, baby. All at once, he followed her. Like an ox going to the slaughter. What an idiot. No, he's a young man. It doesn't take much for young men to be motivated by certain things. And so all at once, he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose, like an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it's going to cost him his life. What's this saying? It's saying this. All simple people. The simple person responds to wisdom with one response, one viewpoint. Nothing's going to happen to me. That's not going to happen to me. No. Going there, doing this, trying this, experimenting with that, that's not going to happen to me. But the follow-up question is asked, well, how can you guarantee that? How do you know that nothing is going to happen to you? And again, I'm not picking on small, simple people. I'm just saying this. How do you know and how can you guarantee? And if you know that so much about that, then why don't you just quit school right now, go into investment banking? And every single other adult in this room will give you their life savings and you invest it for them. I'm just asking, put your money where your mouth is. How do you know it's not going to happen? An older, wiser person, when they give you that warning, they're thinking of all the things that could happen. Verses 24 through 27, Solomon is talking. He's talking to young people. He's talking to inexperienced people. He's talking to simple people, and he's saying this. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Pay attention to what I say. Do not let your heart turn to her ways or stray into her paths. And here's the reason why. Experience. Many are the victims that she's brought down. Her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a highway to the grave, leading down to the chambers of death. In other words, she's got a track record and she's got a roster of ruined lives that are attached with her. And what makes you think that you're the exception to that rule? It's not going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. Why do parents overreact? Why do parents so often overreact? It's because they anticipate the future. It's not going to happen to me. I'm thinking about what could happen to you if you get in that car. I'm thinking about what would happen if you did hang out with that person. I'm thinking about what would happen if you exposed yourself to that, went here, done that, tried this, opened yourself all to that. I'm thinking about the future. And again, most of the time, many times young people lack experience. And again, this isn't your fault. You're not bad. It's not something that you're missing out on. But I'm here to tell you that the reason why it's hard for you to believe it could happen to you is because you haven't experienced anything yet. You haven't experienced debt to the point that you can't pay the rent or pay the mortgage. You haven't experienced addiction to the point that it owns you. You don't shake it. It won't shake you and you don't shake it. Oh, it won't happen to me. If I try this, smoke this, snort this and everything, nah, that happens to other people. You don't know, and you don't know the grips of addiction. And there are people in this room today could come alongside you and say, you know what, been there, done that, tried that, got the t-shirt. And I'll tell you, you don't want to go there. Oh, it's not going to happen to me. And he goes, that's funny, I said the same thing. You've never had your heart so broken. You've never had your heart so broken, so betrayed, so absolutely decimated to the point that you are absolutely, literally, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually unable to have a relationship. And I'll tell you this, you've never seen the consequences of not being careful with your sexuality to the point that it bruises your soul to the measure you are unable to have an absolutely biblically intimate relationship. And I'm not talking about sex. I'm not talking about physical expression here. Anybody can have sex. I'm talking about it's not going to happen to me. Really, it's not going to happen to you. But I also want to understand this. It's not all doom and gloom. That youth and wisdom do not have to be mutually exclusive. You could have all the benefits of youth and all the benefits of the wisdom at the same time. You don't have to allow a simple view of life to wreck and ruin your young life. You don't have to do it the hard way. But however, in order to do it the easy way, you will have to get wisdom. You will have to seek wisdom. You will have to pursue wisdom. You will have to chase it. You'll have to ask for it because you haven't lived long enough to get it yourself. Now you may say, well, yes, I have. Yes, I have. I've got experience. But again, I'm going to have to say, because what I would say to you on that is you've fallen for what I call the experience myth. There's an experience myth, and it says experience in and of itself makes me wiser. The simple say, or that they think, I don't need to read, I don't need to learn, I don't need to prepare, I don't need to ask questions, I certainly don't need to seek counsel, because I have had this or that experience. Author Chris Jamie said this, there is this common notion that people are shallow and ignorant until they go out and see the world. There's this idea that they're shallow and ignorant until they actually see the world, and you get some experience. I, on the other hand, went out, and in comparison realized I was in pretty good standing. In other words, I didn't need to have that experience to know that was dumb. I didn't need to have the experience to know that if I go this way, try this, be with this person and everything, experiment with this and everything, I knew before that I would get into some trouble. And I'm here to tell you, I may have missed out on a lot of experiences and everything, but I live with a lot less regret. I'm not worried about someone showing up on my doorstep with my baby. I'm just telling you. I didn't have a lot of wisdom in my youth and everything, but I can go back to times in my life and everything where the opportunity arose myself, and that moment, I heard the Spirit of God say, get away. And now I live with no regret. You don't have to have experience to have wisdom, because experience does not necessarily make you wiser. It oftentimes makes you older, it makes you tired, it makes you poorer. Experience in and of itself doesn't make you wiser. Evaluated experience makes you wiser. Evaluated experience makes you wiser. So to all the simple people, I would say this. Don't trade what you want most for what you want right now. Don't trade what you want most for what you want right now. You can be young and you can be wise. You can have it all. You can have the advantage of youth. Many who are older, oh, I wish I knew then what I know now, but I wish I had the strength then that I wish I could have it now. And everything, man, I could change the world. And you young people have that opportunity. It's wide out in front of you. You can have wisdom. You don't have to have experience in of itself, but you can have wisdom. And listen, you listen, you align your words, you follow this collection of directions for your life. Leave your simple ways and you will live. Walk in the way of insight. Before you try to get a handle on somebody else's situation, who's got a handle on you? Are you simple or are you the fool? Who's the fool? Proverbs 12:15 says, the way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice. You know what the Hebrew word for fool is? It's ironic. The Hebrew word for fool is evil. Evel. It's the Hebrew word evel. That sounds like evil to me. The difference between a simple person and a fool is the fool knows right and wrong, but doesn't care. This is what a fool sounds like. You have a conversation with a fool lately? You have a conversation. Do you know that will harm you? Yes. So you're going to do it anyway? Yes. Didn't you read the instructions? It kind of says that there's a risk? Yes. But I don't care. It's my life. It's my life, and I can do what I want. Proverbs 26:11, you know it well. I'm sure this goes into a fortune cookie. Maybe it shouldn't go into a fortune cookie. Proverbs 26:11 says this, as a dog returns to its vomit, so fools return to their folly. Now, I don't have to paint a picture for you on that. That's just what fools do. How's that looking to you? Proverbs 10:23, a fool finds pleasure in wicked schemes, but a person of understanding delights in wisdom. Now, we can see all this in other people, but watch out. You can point out a fool. Oh, I see, he's a fool. He's a fool. She's a fool. He's a fool. Everything. But do you ever see it in yourself? Because if you have any area in your life where you say, where you read, where you hear truth and wisdom, but you respond, I know this is wrong, but I'm going to do it anyway. If there's any area in your life, I know I should eat better, but I'm not going to do it. I know I shouldn't look at that, but I'm going to look at it anyway. It's just once a month. Anything and everything. I know what is right to do, but I'm not going to do it. Psalm would say, you're a fool. And I would challenge you, watch out for a myth that you'll fall into. You'll fall possibly into the no better myth. And the no better myth convinces us that, well, I know better, so I'll automatically do better. Well, I know what is true, but I'm just not going to do it. I know what's better. But that doesn't mean you're going to do better. Because it doesn't mean that you have the power and the strength in and of yourself to actually do it. And hence the need to follow, to align your life sooner rather than later with God's collection of directions for your life. See, ultimately, fools will come back when they experience the only cure that ails them. How do you handle a simple person? Well, you don't. The only cure for the simple person is time. Well, it's not going to happen. That's never going to happen. Mom, Dad, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Honey, no, that's not going to happen to me and everything. And you tried to speak wisdom to them and you just don't. You're ready to beat your head against the wall. The only cure for the simple is going to be time. Unfortunately, the cure for the fool is much deeper, and that's tragedy. Well, they're going to have to hit a wall. They're going to have to come to grips. They're going to have to hit rock bottom before they wake up and realize that they have been a fool. See, you can't teach a fool because, again, they already know. I know, says it on the box, says the instructions say this, doctor said this, your counselor said this, your pastor said this. I know, but I'm not going to do it. And for those of you that respond, I know and I don't care, let me just tell you this. In your mind, you think it's your body. In your mind, you think it's your money. In your mind, you think it's your time in all these things, but that's not true. This is where your foolishness has blinded you to your selfishness. You know, fools are selfish. They're just selfish. And the tragedy of the fool is that, yeah, you may not hurt yourself. You're going to end up hurting someone else. I find it really interesting statistically that I haven't found all the statistics, but it just seems like it's just a tragedy that it's so often in drunk driver accidents, it's not the drunk driver that gets killed. It's their passenger, isn't it? That doesn't seem very fair. I know you're not supposed to drink and drive, but I'm going to do it anyway. Great. That's selfish. Proverbs 13:20 says, "Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm." See, before you try to get a handle on a fool, you need to ask yourself, who has got a handle on me? Otherwise, you run the risk of becoming a fool yourself. Proverbs 17:24 says, "A discerning person keeps wisdom in view, but a fool's eyes wander to the ends of the earth." It's the companion of fools that suffer harm. You know a fool? You think you can get a handle on a fool? I know, but I'm not going to do it. Good luck. Now, the third category, real quick, is worse than a simple person, and it's certainly worse for a fool. It's the mocker. The mocker is the fool on steroids. In fact, this is interesting. Proverbs 12:21-24 says, "The proud and arrogant person, mocker is his name, behaves with insolent fury." The Hebrew word for mocker, get this, is lutz. When I first read this word, I thought it was lutz. In other words, they're nuts. Mockers are nuts. You can't negotiate with them. They know the difference between right and wrong, but they don't care. And they go even further. They are critical. They are condescending. They dominate the conversation. They always come off as the smartest person in the room. They control their world. They control their relationships by being condescending. How do you deal with this person? You don't. Proverbs 9:7-8 says this, "Whoever corrects a mocker invites insults. Whoever rebukes the wicked incurs abuse. Do not rebuke mockers, or they will hate you. Rebuke the wise, and they will love you." In other words, you can't deal with a mocker. So what do you do? I know this may sound offensive. This may sound countercultural to so many things you've been raised up in the church, but you know what? The Word of God should trump anything that you've been raised with in culture. And the proverb says, you throw them out. Proverbs 22:10 says, "Drive out the mocker and out goes strife. Quarrels and insults are ended." If you have a mocker in your midst, good luck negotiating with them. You're not going to talk them into changing. And so before you try to get a handle on them, who's got a handle on you? You can't control, you can't change, you can't handle difficult people. And here's the warning here today as we get ready to close. If you're a fool, if you're a simple person, if you're a mocker, you can only fake it for so long. Eventually, if you fall into one of these categories, you're going to need wisdom. The trouble is, at some point, when you need it, you will not be able to see it. The Bible says that if you sit in these seats, if you stand in these ways of the simple person, the fool, or the mocker, eventually you will not be able to recognize wisdom even if it's staring you in the face. Eventually, a simple person, a fool, or a mocker is going to need to break out of an addiction. They're going to need to rescue a marriage. They're going to need to get out of debt. They're going to need to recover their health somehow. They're going to need to make some friends. They're going to need to reconnect with their kids. And the problem is if they remain a simple person, remain a fool, or remain a mocker for so long, they get to the point where they can't recognize the wisdom if it's staring them in the face. One last scripture I want to point out to you. And this is where God shows you his love by warning you in advance. I find it interesting that this warning comes at the beginning of the book of Proverbs. Before you identify all the different parts of difficult people, Proverbs says, no, don't even get there. Don't even become that. Align your life with God's word first and live a life with no regret. Proverbs 1:20-33, Solomon depicts wisdom as a woman crying out. It says, "Out in the open, wisdom calls aloud. She raises her voice in the public square. And on top of the wall, she cries out at the city gate. She makes her speech." It's public. It's available. How long will you who are simple love your simple ways? How long will mockers delight in mockery and fools hate knowledge? How long are you going to sit there? How long are you going to wait? Are you going to give it another year? Are you going to live in that condition 5 more years? I mean, how long is long enough? Repent at my rebuke, it says in verse 23. And then I will pour out my thoughts to you. I will make known to you my teachings. It's available if you want it. But since you refuse to listen when I call, and no one pays attention when I stretch out my hand, since you disregard all my advice and do not accept my rebuke, I in turn will laugh when disaster strikes you. I will mock when calamity overtakes you. When calamity overtakes you like a storm, when disaster sweeps over you like a whirlwind, when you're so out of control in the area that you thought you were in control, when distress and trouble overwhelm you, you can play Peter Pan and refuse to grow up. You can try to pretend to be so smart and have it all together. You can scoff at all those silly little Christians all you want, but look what happens. Verses 28 and 29. And then they will call to me and I will not answer. They will look for me, but will not find me, since they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord. Since they would not accept my advice and they spurned my rebuke, they will eat the fruit of their ways and be filled with the fruit of their schemes. Every single one of us is sowing seed, folks. You will get the fruit of the seed that you plant. It says in verse 32, for the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of the fool, the person that says, I don't care, will destroy them. But the good news is, whoever listens to me will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm. You can't negotiate with a simple person, you can't negotiate with a fool, and you can't negotiate with a mocker. So the best thing is, you don't. The challenge for us today is this. It's not so much identifying the problem with the other person, but every time you point the finger at someone else, three fingers are pointing back at you. So the question is, before you try to get the handle on someone else, who's got a handle on you?
Thanks again for listening to this week's edition of the Portland Christian Center podcast. If you want more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center or have a prayer need, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Thanks for listening.